Second hour, next man up, 102.5, the Game Friday edition of the show, getting set for a huge weekend of football, especially on the college slate. We'll dive in to Vandy in South Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, and much more in this hour. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to text or call our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Parker, we just had Skyler text in and say, talk me out of not betting the mortgage on the Rams money line this Sunday. I need you to talk me out of my feelings for the in-state teams, because the later we get into the week, the better I have started to feel about not just Vandy's chances, but I'm starting to feel better about Tennessee's chances against Georgia too. I don't know what it is. Throughout the week, I'd started to creep in that I think both these teams might pull off an upset on Saturday.
Yeah, I don't know if I could talk you out of that, because I was listening to Joe Rexroad this morning and he was getting my juices flowing for the weekend a little bit more, because he's on the Vols hype train all the way.
He was saying it's not if, but when the Vols beat Georgia on Saturday.
Very bold talk from Mr. Rexroad, just saying.
I love it with Robbie that he locked Georgia -4 or -4.5. Georgia, I think in the beginning of the week, I was in on Georgia, just the mystique around the program of, like, they've been so good for the last half decade under Kirby Smart, and Tennessee hasn't had an answer for them. Like, they haven't been within 14 points of Georgia since they last beat them in 2016. So just in terms of history, I was thinking Georgia. But you look at this Georgia team, the offense has left a lot to be desired. I know the defense is good, but they face Marshall and Austin Peay. Like, the defense should dominate with the players they have over there. The offense should, too. They only put up 28 points against Austin Peay. And I was listening yesterday to the Chase and Big Joe show, and they were talking about that game. Georgia does not have – they have one pass over 25 yards this season. One. Against Marshall and Austin Peay.
Sounds about right. Their offense has sputtered on and off, because they haven't, you know, Georgia's been one of the best offenses when it comes to utilizing the tight ends over the last 4 to 5 years. They have not done that. And for whatever reason, the Vols, if they want to win this game, they have to make Gunnar Stockton beat him through the air.
Yep.
Which he's capable of, but he just hasn't done it through 2 weeks. He's making his first true road start in Neyland Stadium as the QB1 of the Georgia Bulldogs. How is he going to respond to that? That's what I'm looking for.
Right, and it's not like there's a lack of talent on this Georgia team. There's never going to be a lack of talent on this Georgia team. But like you got Oscar Delp out there, who, he's not Brock Bowers, but still a really talented tight end. Zachariah Branch, the transfer from USC, not only an electric returner, but he's a weapon on offense at wide receiver. Dylan Bell's a really good player. I just was reminded that they have London Humphreys, former Vanderbilt wide
receiver, who has made some noise
on the team.
In practice for Georgia. They haven't forgotten about him.
So, Georgia, the talent is there. And would it shock me if Georgia went in and did it again and won by 2 touchdowns in Neyland? It wouldn't shock me, but I feel like this is going to be a game. It's going to be a game. I'm feeling better about Tennessee as we get closer. Like, we've had the conversation, Parker, about the quarterbacks at Tennessee under Josh Heupel. And you'd like to have the quote-unquote arm talent quarterbacks. That's what Joe Milton was. That's what Nico was. They were the guys, prototypical. You look at what they can do in shorts and a t-shirt, and you're like, yeah, that's a quarterback that we want on our team. But maybe between the ears, it wasn't quite what Josh Heupel needed to run his offense. Hendon Hooker and Joey Aguilar, in terms of arm talent, if you're just watching a guy making throws against air, maybe the arm talent isn't quite there for Joey Aguilar and Hendon Hooker. But they know how to run that offense. And we've seen throughout the first 2 weeks, again, against ETSU and Syracuse, who almost got beat by UConn at home on Saturday, that Joey Aguilar can run this offense. And I think if they can get out to a good start, keep that crowd in it against Georgia. I know 2 years ago when Georgia came to Neyland, they had the long touchdown run to start it, and Georgia then kind of piled on after that. But I think if you can get off to a good start, punch Georgia in the mouth, and get that Neyland 100,000 plus just right on top of that Georgia offense. You mentioned it's Gunnar Stockton making his first true career road start. I think they could pull it off.
I haven't been shy about this at all. Joe Milton and Nico are much more talented than Joey Aguilar. But Joey Aguilar, in terms of running the offense, it's not about how far can you throw the football? How tight of a spiral can you throw? That's not what this is about. This is about operating the offense. Through two games, Joey Aguilar has operated the offense much better than I've seen Joe Milton operate the offense, much better than I've seen Nico operate the offense. He has the timing down. He can throw a deep ball and actually with air under the football, which something Joe Milton didn't do, something Nico didn't do. That's going to benefit them on top of having home field advantage.
Right. Like, I mentioned arm talent. Like, how far can you throw the ball? Joe Milton can throw an orange 90 yards. But if it's not accurate, it doesn't matter. Last year, Nico had a lot of issues overthrowing the deep ball. We've seen Joey Aguilar be able to complete a couple of those early on. So, I don't know. There's something leaking in that may... And again, I'm not a... You see the V on the chest here? Like, I'm not a big Tennessee guy. I enjoy when Tennessee loses, but there's just something creeping in. You know, I'll be rooting for Georgia with my heart, but with my head, I'm starting to feel like Tennessee has a good shot in this game.
Jake, stop it. You don't know what you're doing to me right now. Stop it, Jake.
Yeah, Parker's getting his hopes up because he's got a couple people early on here saying they think Tennessee can win. 3280 says Joey equals Stetson Bennett, and like it's a good comparison of like, you don't have to be the most talented quarterback to have success in college. How many good college quarterbacks have there been that just don't have what it takes to be an NFL quarterback? Like, we're going to talk Vandy in the next segment. Diego Pavia is not an NFL quarterback. And I wouldn't be shocked if a team brings him in to give him a shot, because when you do have that much success in college and you're experienced and you're smart, somebody's going to give you a chance. I would guess he's late round pick at the earliest, undrafted free agent most likely. But in terms of central casting for NFL quarterbacks, Diego Pavia is not that. Doesn't have the strongest arm. He's not big. But he knows how to win in college. And I think Joey Aguilar can be exactly that with Tennessee.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Max Duggan, another great example, went to a national championship with TCU out of all teams.
Even some of the greatest college quarterbacks of all time. Like, how many great college quarterbacks have not panned out in the NFL?
Manziel. Trevon Boykin. Manziel, guys like that. We can go all the way back.
You can talk Manziel was more off the field. I think he also just wasn't an NFL-type quarterback. Tim Tebow.
Another great example.
Phenomenal college quarterback. He was never going to make it in the NFL. Some of the Ohio State guys, like Braxton Miller and...
Cardale Jones. JT Barrett.
All those guys... They knew exactly what it took to win in college. They couldn't do it in the NFL. You don't have to be the 6'5" cannon of an arm quarterback in college football to win. It helps you get drafted. That's why Will Levis got drafted in the second round. But it does help. That's why Anthony Richardson got drafted fourth overall, because he fit the prototypical NFL quarterback.
That's why Joe Milton is the backup in Dallas right now.
Right.
Same logic applies to
Trey Lance. Like, all these guys, you get drafted to the NFL based off of traits, not production as a quarterback. Production helps, but that's not why you get drafted. You don't need to have the traits to win in college, and we've seen that with both quarterbacks in the state so far this season. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you have thoughts, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We've talked Tennessee. Again, it's leaking into my head. I think Tennessee has a good chance to win this game against Georgia on Saturday.
Jake, you're scaring me.
But I feel the same way about Vanderbilt. We'll get into that coming up next. Commodores on the road, taking on South Carolina on Saturday. You can tune in right here on 102.5 The Game. Pregame starts at 5 p.m. and kickoff is at 6:45. Vanderbilt football is brought to you by Gary Force Acura, Jimmy Kelly Steakhouse, and Smoky Mountain Tops. We'll talk doors on the other side. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Tomorrow, the MTSU Blue Raiders will take on Nevada at 4 o'clock. Catch all of the action on Totally Hits 93.3 with coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Looking across the college football slate this weekend, two big games with in-state schools. We just talked Tennessee I'm starting to feel like Tennessee has a good shot against Georgia on Saturday. I don't know what it is, but I feel the same way about Vanderbilt. Commodores going to face number 11 South Carolina on the road in Columbia. And maybe it's partially 16 straight losses for Vandy against South Carolina. And it's not like South Carolina is Alabama or LSU or something where it's like, oh yeah, that kind of makes sense that it's been a while since Vandy beat him. It's South Carolina, who's not known as this college football powerhouse. Shane Beamer has them in the playoff conversation. I think Vandy's due. And I think Vandy is going to get the win on Saturday on the road. It was kind of perfect scheduling that they got to play in Blacksburg last weekend. And I don't know if they're, like, Diego Pavia is never scared. But I'm sure for a lot of those guys, that was the first time playing in a hostile environment, whether it's young guys or some transfers like C.J. Hurd for on the defense, the safety. He transferred from FAU. I'm sure he hadn't played in a spot like that. I don't know. I didn't look at their schedule. But I think getting that out of the way as kind of a tune-up for another tough road environment is huge. And South Carolina, it's not like they've looked like world beaters. They are ranked 11th in the country purely based on reputation from what they did at the end of last season and their quarterback, Lenora Sellers.
Yeah, my heart wants to pick Vanderbilt just outright because I feel like they are due for a win. I feel like their roster is much better than it was last year. South Carolina on the other side, think about it. You've brought this up before. It's kind of like a mini round robin because these teams have a common opponent in right. Virginia Tech, and you look at what South Carolina did versus Virginia Tech in week one versus what Vandy did last week. South Carolina beat Virginia Tech 24-11. Vanderbilt outscored Virginia Tech or had more yardage by 300.
In the 300
yards in the second half. They emptied out Lane Stadium. So we kind of have a point to go off of. I feel like Vanderbilt is due, but then I look at South Carolina and who they have at quarterback in Lenore Sellers, and it scares me.
It's going to come down to the quarterbacks, I think. Somebody's going to have to make a play late in that game to get a win. And you mentioned the common tape. Like they both have played Virginia Tech, and the transitive rule does not work in football. We know this. It doesn't work in any sports of like, oh, well, Vanderbilt beat Virginia Tech by 24, and South Carolina beat them by 13, so that means Vandy's 11 points better. That's not how that works. This is football. They're going to line it up. They're going to play. But you do have common tape, and you can see how you attacked Virginia Tech because that can show you the game plan of what they're going to want to do against you. And I don't know. I like Shane Beamer. Again, as somebody who grew up watching Frank Beamer-led teams and, you know, Shane was on those staffs, I like Shane Beamer. I don't know if he is as much of a football mind as Clark Lea is. And I know Shane's got like NFL guys on his staff. It's not all just him. But
Mike Shula, the offensive coordinator.
Right. Like he's got guys on his staff who are very like they've been in it for a long time. They've got football in their blood. But I just believe in Clark Lea. Watching that Netflix documentary, I brought this up to Andrew Allegretta yesterday when we had him on, that Clark just commands that locker room, and there is full 100% belief in him as a leader and a coach and the vision that he has for this program. I don't know what it like. There's just a feeling that they're going to go in there and win it. I think it's going to be close. I think it might come down to Diego Pavia having to make a big play at some point, like the Alabama game last year. They were not expected to win that game. Obviously, like Alabama's was the number one team in the country coming in. And Diego Pavia on fourth down and one, I think it was third quarter, fourth quarter? Third quarter. It was third quarter.
Yep.
And fourth and one, the play was supposed to go to Eli Stowers, and they took it away. And instead of panicking, like I think a lot of quarterbacks would, he made a beautiful throw for a touchdown to Junior Sherrill. And that was the big play that Alabama really couldn't dig themselves back from. I know Vandy had to score again later in the game, but that was the play. I think you're going to need something like that from Diego Pavia on the road against South Carolina. But I've got a feeling. I think both in-state schools are going to win this week. I think Tennessee and Vanderbilt both are going to get big wins. And we're going to head into next week for Tennessee and Vanderbilt with both those teams ranked. I know Tennessee's already 15th, but Tennessee might be a top 10 team. Vanderbilt would be a top 20 team heading into next week. And Vandy's got a couple of games that they should win at home. I understand last year Georgia State was similar of maybe they got a little too big in their britches, if they're, for lack of a better term, and they ended up losing that game in Atlanta. This one's at home, and after last year, I can't see Vanderbilt overlooking Georgia State.
No, but think about how bad Vanderbilt needs this win, because if they beat South Carolina, they're off to a 3-0 start. You have Georgia State and you have Utah State, both of those games at home, and we've talked about the back half of their schedule and how rough it is.
Right.
They need this win.
If
they need it.
If you can be 5-0 heading into Alabama, like, I understand the goal is to not just get to a bowl game. Like, that is not what Clark Lea has in mind this year. Diego Pavia didn't sue to come back just to go 6-6. Like, he said that before. But if you get to 5-0, you just got to win one more game and you are bowl eligible, which for Vanderbilt historically, that's a big deal, is to get bowl eligible. But you also put yourself in a situation where you have some leeway against the tougher opponents that you play. We talked with Corey Curtis about this on Wednesday, that you do have a really tough back half of your schedule. In your last seven games, you have to play at Alabama, at Texas, LSU at home, at Tennessee.
Missouri's in there too,
Missouri's,
but that game is
there,
at home,
right,
so that's a plus.
Missouri just lost their quarterback for the year.
Yes, yeah. Sam Horn.
Horn broke his leg, so maybe a little bit different there. But you've got four games that, on paper, don't look great. Again, after last year, I don't know if you can make any judgment on paper. That's why they play the games. But at Alabama, at Texas, at Tennessee, and LSU at home, that is not fun. And that's why Vanderbilt heading into the season was ranked as the second hardest schedule in the country. But if you're 5-0, and if your goal is the playoffs, which they've said all offseason that it is, even if you went 1-3 in those games, there's still an outside shot. It would be very outside, but if you go 9-3 and let's say you have a win at South Carolina and a win at home against LSU, would that be enough to at least put them in the conversation? I think maybe yes.
Sure, absolutely.
I don't know if they would get in. Three losses we saw last year, like Alabama and South Carolina, both had three losses. Ole Miss had three losses.
Was in there. They were all in the door.
They all got left out, but I think 9 wins gets you in the conversation, and if you're looking at out of the 5 toughest games that Vanderbilt has to play the rest of the way, South Carolina probably is on the easier side of them, right? Like, you're not playing in Tuscaloosa, you're not playing in Austin, not playing in Neyland. Like, Columbia is a tough place to play, but it's not those places. This is a big game on Saturday. And I got some belief. I got some belief in Diego Pavia and Clark Lea.
I have belief, too, because that Vanderbilt offensive line is not like Vanderbilt offensive lines in the past. They're so big up front.
Yeah.
And defensively, South Carolina lost so much attrition to the NFL draft. They have Dylan Stewart, but outside of that, so many less experienced guys than what they had last year. So that's something that I'm going to be looking for, that Vanderbilt offensive line versus the South Carolina defensive line. I think Williams-Brice is one of the more underrated environments in college football. I like to refer to it as the cockpit. It is going to be tough, but I do have a good feeling about Vanderbilt.
Yeah, you got to face Sandstorm. I loved in the recap video Vandy put out from the Tech game, they said, I'm going to keep this quick. Clark says, I'm going to keep this quick because we got to get out there and hear our song, referring to Enter Sandman. They've tried to claim these like anthems, and they're doing the same thing with Sandstorm this week.
I like that.
I like it.
I reserve the right to be wrong because I picked South Carolina, but I reserve the right to be wrong.
Yep. I'm going to go with Vandy. And you mentioned the offensive line. If you're watching this Vandy-South Carolina game, I talked with Andrew about this a couple of weeks ago, but watch the offensive line when they break the huddle for Vanderbilt, because it's so unique, and maybe it's not as unique as I'm making it out to be, but I haven't really seen this before, that the sides of the line switch. There's a quick tackle and a quick guard and a strong tackle. There is no left and right. So based on what the play call is, watch them come out of the huddle and they swap sides. It makes it so much more difficult, I'm sure, to game plan for Vanderbilt, because usually the defense gets to choose how they line up their pass rushers. And I guess they still do, but it becomes a little bit more of a chess match with Vandy being able to swap which side of the line their guys are playing.
That's
on
like
too.
Playing mind games with the opponent.
Any
little advantage, right? You can find any little advantage. I feel like that's good thing.
I think it's I just think it's unique, and you should watch it if you're watching the game on Saturday. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 2459, clearly a South Carolina fan, says, have you ever been to a night game at Williams-Brice Stadium? If you haven't, then you have no clue. We will beat Vandy, and it won't be close. I haven't been to Williams-Brice Stadium, but like, the point I was trying to make is, Alabama, Tennessee, and Texas are kind of widely known as some of the best atmospheres in all of college football. I think South Carolina is one of the most underrated ones, but that doesn't mean that it's in that tier. It's not nearly as big, but I agree. South Carolina fans, they show up, and it's going to be a tough environment on Saturday night.
Right. I said it was one of the most underrated environments in the country, but the spread is South Carolina -3.5. So Vegas thinks that it's going to be close.
I'm excited. It's going to be a fun day. And again, I said it earlier this week, I love that the schedule lines up that you can enjoy Tennessee, Georgia at 2:30 and then still get to watch those 6:30 games of Vandy, South Carolina, LSU, Florida, Notre Dame, Texas A&M. We're going to talk about some of those games coming up next. And of course, South Florida and Miami. Coming up after reruns of Gossip Girl on the CW. We'll get to that coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. The Week 3 slate of college football loaded. We got some good games this weekend. Excited for the two in-state schools, of course. Tennessee, Georgia on Saturday afternoon. Vanderbilt, South Carolina on Saturday night. We just went through those games. I'm feeling pretty good about both schools getting a win. I don't know what it is. I think we're going to get some upsets. I think the Vols and the Doors both come home with victories on Saturday. On Sunday, if you're heading to the Titans game, be sure to stop by John Bon Jovi's before the Titans take on the Rams for the 102.5 The Game pregame show with Big Joe, Derek Mason, and Chris Sanders from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Pregame show is brought to you by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Old National Bank, Circus Sportsbook Kentucky, and Tennessee Brewworks. We'll get back into the Titans coming up in just a bit, but going to get back into some of the big games in college football this weekend. And I want to start with USF in Miami, because South Florida, with Byron Brown and Alex Golish, they have been the story of college football so far this season. Beating Boise State, which I think Boise State was kind of just ranked because of what they did last year. And it's like the expectations, oh, even if they lost Ashton Gentry, they'll be okay. Not the case. I don't think Boise State's going to be very good this year. But they win that game pretty handily. And then you go beat Florida in the Swamp. And now USF ranked 18th in the country. They get to go take on a top five Miami team. Three straight ranked matchups. USF going to have a chance to prove they're legit. And they may be legit already. I think USF is hands down the favorite to be the group of five representative in the college football playoff right now. Lots can change, but definitely the favorite. This is a chance to pretty much lock that up as long as you don't implode in the American. And I don't know, I like Miami to win, but I think it's going to be closer than people think. That Miami defensive line is going to give USF some problems.
How rare is it that we see an opponent or a team from the group of five, they scale up an opponent the first 3 weeks of the season? They start out with Boise State, then you get Florida in the Swamp, and then you go to Miami. They don't leave the state of Florida for the first 5 weeks of the season. I don't think they have a road game until the North Texas game on October 10th. I have all the confidence in the world that Miami is going to win this game. That's not me hating on USF, because I think they're going to be the group of five representative in the playoff. And depending on the style in which they lose this game, if they were to lose, I'm not really going to look at them any differently, because they're getting the toughest part of their schedule out of the way within the first 3 weeks.
If they win this game, do schools in the SEC that are about ready to fire their coach start calling Alex Golish right now? If they haven't already?
Yeah, I was about to say.
Right, if they haven't already, I think Florida, maybe Kentucky, if they want to let go of Stoops. Trying to think of any other one.
I'd say Alex Golish and John Sumerall at Tulane are the top candidates for Power Four jobs.
Well, and I thought it was interesting. I didn't realize Duke played Tulane this week, and you know, get a little revenge game there for Darian Mensa returning to Tulane.
Tulane will win,
and Tulane's favored.
Tulane is going to win.
Yeah, crazy. Tulane's good. If anybody's going to threaten USF for that top spot in the group of five, it's going to be Tulane. Those are the two teams this year that are both talented, and I agree. I think one, if not both, one of those coaches is going to be coaching in the SEC next year. Florida is definitely the place that you're looking, and we can get to Florida quickly here. DJ Lagway needs to save Billy Napier's job again. He did it last year. Billy Napier was on his way out the door, and then DJ Lagway turned it around, and they finished the season strong, and they gave him another year. This is a big week for Florida. They don't have to win this game because that's a tough ask to go into Death Valley and beat a top five LSU team. They don't have to win this game for Billy Napier to at least trend in the right direction, but they at the very least have to be in it to the very end. And it seems like Sunbelt Billy's time is coming to an end at Florida sooner rather than later. If they win this game, though, that does, I think, extend his leash for a little bit longer.
And stylistically, after because LSU played Louisiana Tech last week, only scored 23 points, 123-7. Post game, you had Brian Kelly trashing his assistant coaches in typical Brian Kelly fashion. And then after the USF game for Florida, Billy Napier basically came out and said, nothing's going to change. So two different approaches, and I feel like Florida, they're playing with their back against the wall. You couldn't afford to lose to USF with that schedule. If you have any hopes of making the college football playoff, LSU has not looked how I thought they'd look on offense the last two games. I think it's going to be a dogfight.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one. You mentioned it's going to be a multi-screen setup Saturday night. We mentioned Vandy, South Carolina. You got Florida, LSU, and of course, believe this is the night game on ABC, A&M Notre Dame.
That's Peacock.
Oh, right. Yep. It's at Notre Dame.
Florida, so yes,
it's
LSU on NBC. Is
Florida,
ABC.
Florida, LSU is the NBC game. And then Kentucky, Ole Miss is going on at the same time, too. Yes. Always forget Notre Dame has their own TV rights. Notre Dame at home against Texas A&M. This is a game the Fighting Irish pretty much have to win, right? Like, you can't start 0-2. We went through the schedule with Corey Curtis on Wednesday, and it's like, yeah, there's a chance that they could win out even if they lost this game, go 10-2 and sneak into the playoff. But I don't know if the strength of the wins is going to be enough to pull them out of it if they do go 0-2. They would, if they lose this game, best case scenario, they are on the bubble of the college football playoff at the end of the year.
Yeah, you're going to have to win out at some point. But I think for Texas A&M, this is the best case scenario because you're going to South Bend in September. Weather's going to be perfect than going in November because cold weather sucks.
Yeah, but my dad went there when Virginia Tech played them back in 2016. Hokies actually did get the win. This was Gerard Evans' year.
I remember that.
First year under Justin Fuente. And he said that was the coldest he has ever been in his life. And that because the wind was like blowing ice chips into their face every time they looked at the field, between plays, they'd turn around and face the press box. And then when they heard the music stop, they'd turn back around and watch the play.
Because they're right there on the lake, I think.
I did not go, but from what I've heard, that is not a place you want to play late in the season. I think A&M is pretty pleased that they're up there in September.
And quick side note, Justin Fuente is actually on the college football committee.
Yeah,
the playoff
he
committee.
Just got a new job there. I like Justin Fuente. Like, I think he, kind of like Kalen DeBoer, but on a smaller scale, of course. Like, it's always tough to follow the legendary coach. And I think everyone expected him to come in and be Beamer. And his first year set some unrealistic expectations when they went 9-3 and almost beat Clemson in the ACC championship game. So I feel bad for Justin Fuente. I'm glad that he's back on his feet. I think he's doing radio color for TCU football.
Look at that.
And
Look
then
at
he's
him.
Doing that with the college football playoffs.
So, it turned out just fine for him.
Props to Fu, rooting for Justin Fuente. 615-737-1025. Going to be a great weekend of college football. I am excited to just sit down and watch all of it. I've had to work a Vandy game each of the last two weekends. I'm not traveling to Columbia this week, so I will be ready to go tomorrow watching game day in Knoxville. By the way, Parker, thoughts on Candace Parker as the guest pick?
Love it, because last time they were in Knoxville, I believe the guest picker was Peyton Manning. So you got to get all the legends represented. I'm really, really happy that Candace Parker, she's a great representative of the university.
Yeah, she was one of my first thoughts of who they would go with. I know some people said Morgan Wallen.
I don't think they'd let him on.
I don't know about that. Other options, of course, Peyton. Dolly was one they were talking. I think Robbie
that
and Joe were talking about
awesome.
Dolly. That one would be cool.
That would be awesome.
But Candace Parker she's got personality. Obviously, she does like the inside the NBA stuff. So I think she'll be good. I'm excited for game day tomorrow. Going to be a fun Saturday of college football. Lots of big games, especially the two local to us with Tennessee and Vanderbilt. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you have any thoughts, you can text or call us. We'll stick with some college football. Also, maybe some Preds thoughts in this last segment of the hour as the Preds are back on the ice. The rookies out there yesterday. We'll do some college football, do some Preds, wrap up hour number two after this. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 1025 The Game. Next man up, 1025 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Friday. Getting ready for lots of football this weekend. Tennessee, Georgia, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, Titans and Rams. We'll get back into the Titans coming up in the final hour of the show. Getting ready for the home opener, Cam Ward's real Nissan Stadium debut. I know he was out there in the preseason against the Vikings, but going to be the first time in a real game that Cam Ward is out there in front of the home crowd. We'll look at that coming up in about 10 minutes. I did want to finish up the conversation on college football here. Justin from Greenbrier on our text line says, it is fun that college football has this much parity in real life. I remember taking small programs like Tulane or Vanderbilt to the national championship on the video game. This has been the best thing to come out of NIL. It is a more interesting product overall and not just top heavy anymore. It is interesting because you can take both sides of that argument. You can say that the schools that have money are the ones who are spending the money, so it can be a competitive advantage for some of the big schools. And that's why we've seen, I think, the SEC and the Big Ten pull away, is because they do have the money. The ACC and the Big 12 don't have quite as much money. But I also look at it as, yeah, you are seeing the schools within the conferences kind of come together. Like, Alabama doesn't dominate the SEC as much as they used to. It's shrinking the gap. And that does make it more fun when we can talk about these games. And it's not Georgia-Tennessee, and it's like, Georgia's probably going to blow them out. Oh, Vandy, South Carolina. South Carolina's going to win by two touchdowns. Like, it is fun that we get to look at these games this Saturday and say, we're expecting two really competitive games with a lot on the line because of the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, and I don't think it's completely leveled the playing field for everybody. I think rather than before pre-NIL, when we had the same four or five teams competing every year for a national championship, the bubble has expanded to maybe now you have 10, 11, 12 teams that are all capable of winning a national championship, which is something we've said in the past. I think Texas Tech is a great case study.
Right.
They went out and they bought their entire team. Texas Tech has never been a college football power. They've never even been to a Big 12 championship game.
Yep.
That's going to be a team with a lot of high expectations this year, and they're the perfect case study for this.
Money rules the world in everything, including college football, and Texas Tech found some young oil money, and guess what? They're spending it. They just paid a 17-year-old tackle $5 million to come to Texas Tech. So there are obviously downsides to NIL. We've talked about a ton of them, but I do think it is good that you get to see these fan bases get more invested, because back in the BCS days, like, unless you were one of the top six or seven teams heading into the year, very unlikely you were ever going to find yourself in position to play for a national championship. It's not the case anymore. I mean, we saw Indiana playing the college football playoff last season. So it's a good thought from Justin from Greenbrier. Real life now mirroring the video game more, where it's like,
look at that.
Hey, if you get into the dance, you got a chance. So, good way to wrap up our conversation in college football. Did want to spend a couple of minutes on the Preds, because the Preds did hit the ice. The rookies were out there. Some of the young guys out there at Fordyce Bellevue yesterday. And I'm not people know that I'm not the biggest hockey guy. Like, I'm not a hockey expert by any
means.
What
does that make me?
I leave that to Adam Vingan and Willie Donick and Chase, a big hockey guy. But I feel like I have a pretty decent read on hockey. I've been following it since I was a kid, but it's not like it was the one thing that I dive into. Robbie Stanley would be in that group too. But I, just as I have a feeling about Tennessee and Vandy this weekend, I think the Preds, that roster is constructed in a way that they can be competitive this year, that they could be a playoff team this season. I know things went horribly last year. You had the third worst record in the league, but you do have the veteran leadership and the talent on that team. And I think if a couple of these young guys can step up, and I know it's sounding kind of exactly like last year of like, man, if the young guys can figure it out, like Tommy Novak and Luke Evangelista, I get it. It's, you know, sound like a broken record, but I do think some of these young guys can step up. Tanner Molendijk, I think, is going to be great on the defensive, on one of those defensive pairs in his first season. And can Brady Martin make the team? That's the storyline I'm following for the next couple of weeks as we lead up to the preseason. I can't believe it's already here, by the way, that hockey is just a couple weeks away.
Yeah, it seems like a very quick offseason. I did want to ask you, what do you think went wrong for this team last year? Because it seemed like in the preseason, we were talking about them as legit Stanley Cup contenders, then it just rock bottom.
That was what they were expected to be. I mean, you went out and spent all that money after you make that miraculous run with the point streak and you get to the playoffs, and then you add Stamkos, Marchessault, and Shea, and the expectation was you are going to be contenders in the West. And then they started 0-5, and it just felt like they never dug out of it. And I don't know if it takes some time to get those guys accustomed to Bruno's system or to their teammates. I think they're going to be better. The veterans are going to be better this year. They're going to play more together. And again, I think it's the young guys. Brady Martin, I understand that it maybe was a disappointing pick for a lot of people when the Preds made that pick at number 5, because it wasn't the flashy names that had been talked about for the last couple of weeks. But he said yesterday that he's been living with Philip Forsberg at times during the summer. Like, I'm excited about this Preds team. And again, not hockey is not exactly my forte, but I'm just looking ahead, and I'm moving closer to downtown next week. And I'm like, I'm excited to go to some Preds games this year because I think they're going to be competitive. And I understand it could be exactly the same as last year, where you look at it and it just doesn't click for some of these veteran guys. But I got a good feeling about the Preds this year.
What about coaching? How do you feel about the coaching?
Bruno's gonna have to prove it, right? Like, he's kind of in a similar scenario to where Brian Callahan is heading into this year. Of like, could they have fired him at the end of the year? Yeah, there was definitely cause to make that move. They gave him another chance. Can he prove that he's the guy? And with Callahan, it was a horrible first impression on Sunday. Bruno's got to get off to a better start than that. Like, you can't, I guess the equivalent would be like another 0-5 start.
And is it common in hockey to, let's say you do get off to, just hypothetically, you get off to another 0-5 start? Do hockey teams fire their coach midseason?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Is that a common thing?
I think hockey is one of the sports where you will see pretty early on in the season, if things aren't going well, that they'll fire the coach. So I think Bruno's on thin ice.
I see what you did there.
But I do think the talent is there. They do have to work out the deal with Luke Evangelista. I guess he's still a restricted free agent, so they haven't worked that out yet. I'm sure that's coming. You know, the season working is a deadline. I'm sure we'll figure that all out. But I have some hope for the Preds this year. They got to get off to a better start, but I'm excited to see the young guys, and I can't believe it. Preseason is what, 2-3 weeks away, and the regular season starts in early October. So hockey season, I think, is the shortest offseason for me. Like,
By far.
Like it goes by so fast. We're already here and excited for the Preds. So just a quick thought there. I heard Willie and Adam talking about this on DVD yesterday, and again, I wouldn't call myself a hockey savant, but I'm excited for hockey season. I think the Preds could surprise some people this year. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have thoughts, you can text or call our phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One more hour for us today. We're getting back into the Titans. Titans and Rams coming up on Sunday. Home opener for Cam Ward. What's the crowd going to look like? What's the reaction going to be, not only for Cam Ward when he's announced, but for Brian Callahan? We'll get into that coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.